I would put it like this. If you don't know one path really well, you can't understand how all paths are the same. If you don't really understand one path really well, you can't see the commonalities that other paths share. So the temptation, I think there's a great temptation in the modern age, since so much information is available about lots and lots of spiritual traditions. The temptation is to just be a dilettante and to, you know, just kind of like pick and choose and like, you know, float from one to another and, you know, kind of like do this eclectic, you know, kind of shopping trip, spiritual shopping trip, and place like, you know, a bunch of different sort of disparate things into your shopping cart and then, you know, check out and go home and put together your own religion or something on the basis of these, you know, various components that you've like drawn from a whole bunch of different traditions. And actually it doesn't work that way. It won't work that way. You know, if you take a carburetor from a Toyota and, you know, a brake system from a Chevrolet and a chassis from Mercedes-Benz and try to put it all together, the car's not going to run. And it's like that when it comes to this kind of spiritual eclecticism or, you know, hybrid, you know, kind of notion that you just put together your own spirituality. So I think, you know, it's crucial. It's really, really crucial if you're going to make any real progress in your spiritual life to find the tradition that works for you. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it could be any of the world's genuine authentic traditions. The test of that is the test of time. You know, like there's a lot of interesting New Age religions that have come out in the last 50 or 60 years, but who knows if they're going to, you know, survive. You know, Scientology is one of the older ones, and that goes back only to the 1950s, you know, to L. Ron Hubbard in the 1950s. You know, it's only had a 60-year, you know, life so far. But, you know, Christianity and Buddhism and Judaism and Hinduism, Shintoism, Taoism, you know, these are thousands-year-old, you know, Islam. These are thousand-year-old traditions. So if you have the option to pick a thousand, you know, thousands-year-old tradition, why not do that? Because they've been time-tested. So find the one that works for you, and then stick with it. And then, like, delve into it, learn it deeply, practice it, stick with it. And when you know it well enough, then you can look at other religions and see in them different ways of understanding your own. You see? See in them, in different religions, in different spiritualities, different ways of understanding your own. But if you don't understand your own, you won't see that in other religions. You'll just get confused. So I think it's a kind of like, it kind of is like that, Sonia. It's over time. Over time, having made a kind of a commitment to one tradition, over time, that commitment can be widened, can be enlarged, can be understood in greater ways, in deeper ways, by studying other religions. But you have to understand your own religion first, because otherwise there's no point of comparison. There's no basis for comparison. It's just confusing. And it won't really work. So that's my answer to that question. Then I think the other part of your question was like, you know, what is meant by one spiritual path? And you know, that's a complicated question. You can kind of, you know, go down kind of endlessly. You know, you can start with something like Buddhism and then go to, well, Tibetan Buddhism, and then go to, well, Gelugpa Tibetan Buddhism, and then go to, well, the Gelugpa Tibetan Buddhism that was taught to me by Geshe Michael Roach, and then go down further, you know, all the way. I think ultimately you go down to your teacher. So the one spiritual path, you know, is defined by the one teacher that's teaching that spiritual path. And of course that teacher, the one teacher that teaches you the spiritual path is, you know, has been taught by his or her teacher, by their teacher. And that teacher's been taught by their teacher and so forth, and that's a lineage. But ultimately the one spiritual path that you follow, you know, as an authentic practitioner, as somebody who's really kind of interested in making progress quickly, is the one spiritual path as taught to you by a teacher. And so, you know, again, this kind of distinguishes, you know, I wouldn't say it's so much authentic as like, what do you call it, effective. An effective spiritual path is one that has been shown to you by a person, by a live teacher. And this this again like distinguishes a lot of what's going on in the modern world from an effective spiritual path, where a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm sort of attracted to Buddhism, but I'll just like read books and go on websites and listen to podcasts and stuff like that instead of like actually, you know, kind of making a connection to a human teacher, to a teacher who can guide you, who can introduce you to the path and guide you through the thickets. And there are thickets that you know, we just can't learn on our own. It's like the difference between somebody who's, you know, learning to play piano by going on the internet and finding, you know, sort of aids, piano aids, how to play piano on the internet, versus somebody who's got a piano teacher. You know, the piano teacher will see things and will be able to tell you things about your piano playing that the internet cannot. So there's no substitute for that, okay? Then I think the last part of your question was about, like, you know, the hybrids, so-called hybrids between yoga and Buddhism, for example. There, you know, that's the example you used. And, you know, actually, I couldn't hear that.
The Celtic.
Oh yeah, well the Celtic, that I already kind of like answered that. You know, that's just another level. That's another level of the, you know, of going down. But you know, even Celtic Christian Buddhism has been taught by somebody, and it's really, so it's really the teacher. It's really the teacher that represents the spiritual path. And you know, and there are teachers who are representing hybrid spiritual paths. So you can learn Christian Buddhism, Celtic Christian Buddhism from some Celtic Christian Buddhist, I guess, teacher. But you know, the deficits of that are the same as what I talked about before in terms of just like, you know, trying to put together different parts of a, you know, different parts of a car using materials from different, you know, makes, car makes. You know, no, if it's that kind of hybrid, you're not, it's not guaranteed to run. I'll put it like that. If it's Christianity, it's guaranteed to run. If it's Buddhism, it's guaranteed to run. I don't know that much about Celtic pagan religion, but, you know, it's probably pretty good. But when you put them all together, who knows what you're going to get, you see? And then the last thing about yoga and Buddhism. Yoga and Buddhism are not different traditions. Yoga has been a part of Buddhism since the formation of Buddhism. You know, the Buddha got enlightened sitting under a tree. How do you think he sat under the tree long enough to get enlightened if he hadn't practiced some yoga, you know? You must have practiced yoga. Yoga has been a part of all Indian traditions. You know, it's not a separate tradition. Yoga is not a separate tradition. It's not separable from the, you know, from the various kinds of contexts that it's found in. So you find yoga in Buddhism. You find yoga in various kinds of Hinduism. You find yoga in Sikhism, you know, you find yoga in all different kinds of traditions, and that yoga is blended in seamlessly into those traditions. So there, you know, yoga and Buddhism are not different. That's a bad example. The Celtic Christian, what is it? Celtic Christian Buddhist example is better. But it has the problems that I talked about, okay?